Is everybody keeping cool today? It's really hot outside.
Super hot, sticky.
Yeah, it's really gross. It's
so like, hot.
You kiss, you just sweat looking at it.
I'm just so hot right now.
So gross.
Oh, hey,
so
what, is there a back end to your fucking joke?
Just
you just started, Sean?
No.
Just want to say, hi, it's hot outside? What kind of cold open is this?
It's a hot open. Welcome to Smartless. Smartless. Smart.
JB, I'm across the street from you.
Yeah, no, I know.
What do you
I
mean?
See. So wait, so you're up top, right? So,
yeah, I'm
all
the top.
Way up top?
I'm up top. Did you ask? What was the question?
Sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
So I think I can see you. You can see me.
I'm not in
my
window.
Wait, are you being serious?
You can see the can you see the scaffolding?
Yeah. What's going on up there? Are we doing
Do you see
remodeling?
Like a black bag on the scaffolding that's blowing in the wind?
No.
Okay.
Because I'm on the south side of the building. South side of your building.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's on the south side of the building, way up there. Yeah. There's like a little black bag.
No, because the whole building is netted, so I don't see that.
Oh, okay? You don't see through the netting.
No, I don't. Anywho, so we're neighbors. We've never lived closer to one another.
I know.
Actually, no. That when you lived in my house with me and my wife.
That was so fun.
Why does my youngest daughter look so much like you?
This is before the kids, and the God, your floors are so creaky, and I was just always like, at night, just like, I didn't want to make a sound
sneaking
as I
around.
Snuck around.
Your cigarettes. I was smoking back then, too, though, wasn't I?
You sure were.
Mm-hmm. Hey,
sure
why
were.
Is your hair so cut?
Yeah, it looks
I just
good.
Had a little trim ski.
Is Eli with you right now?
No, I didn't see Eli. I went to see my boy, my guy, Kevin Woon. Do you get, you
why?
Know about Kevin?
Wait, are you in a fight with Eli?
No. I just haven't seen Eli. And
what happened to Eli and you?
No.
Well.
I love Eli. You know, I feel like.
So wait. So, now, Sean also has a personal hairdresser.
Sean, you've got a new person. Who's your person?
Yeah. His name is Marco.
Hey, hashtag relatable. You both have personal hairdressers?
No, it's the. No, it's not personal.
No, yeah, they're
it's
not like full-time employment, you jerk.
Yeah.
Kind
not
of.
Not on the payroll. No.
Who cuts your hair?
Whoever is heading the hair department on whatever project I'm working.
That's such a lie.
As a matter of fact, she just left the apartment. She is the key hairdresser on the...
Yeah. And she came over to the house.
Yeah,
huh?
So that's
she
personal.
Did.
You're
she
not
did.
Even in the cast this time. You're the director. So she had to come to the director's house.
I am
so
doing
now
one
who's
scene.
That's so icky. And
who's highfalutin?
I'm doing one small scene.
The director
qualifies
wanted
as a free
me.
Cut.
His legs are broken, so he couldn't come to me. So I had to go to the director's apartment down in fancy part of Manhattan. Okay.
Yeah, right? Jeez,
so,
man.
Sean, you're enjoying your new hairdresser?
I am. He's really, really good. Marcos, yeah.
So much so that you won't take your hat off.
Yeah, take your hat off. Let's see what Marcos is doing
because,
to you.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Well, it's just, you know, I look
put
like.
Back on. Yeah. Back on.
Like Bill said, I look like a page boy.
I didn't say that. I just said it looks
you
like
said
your
I
hair is attached
on Saturday
to the hat.
Night, you said I look like a page boy.
Oh,
and Saturday
night.
Said, and I said, were you going for. What scientist? Mad scientist? Because your hair.
My hair was longer because it was sticky. Yeah. It was all sticking out. And you said, did you just say to them, give me the mad scientist?
Yes.
And so, Will, you've got a.
That's why I cut my hair because Sean shamed me.
Is that true? Or is it just like a summer sort of. Or you? Is it swim team?
It looks good short like that, Will.
You know what? I can't believe that you would habitually chew gum on a fucking podcast.
I know.
I mean,
I'm nervous.
He just.
It wasn't, by the way, it's not loud the way I'm doing it.
You've gotten better at that, but it still sneaks through. And I'll bet you, I'll speak for Rob and Bennett right here, it's getting annoying having to mute your microphone every once in a
Bennett,
while.
Bennett, Rob, tell me, is it true?
We tidy it up.
You know what? You know
Some
what?
People
Bennett
have
Rob
nicotine addiction.
I have a special relationship with Bennett and Rob, who may love me.
And nicotine.
You know what?
Our coffee chat's real hyper today. I think
it
it's
is.
My
it
fault.
It is. I love
well,
it.
I'm having one now, too. I'm having the rare 1 p.m.
Yes,
coffee.
It's
we're
1
in real Regis and Kathy Lee areas.
And we're lucky. Lucky to be associated.
All right. Do you want to get on with it?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Do you want to tee up your intro?
Yeah. How about you guys? How about let's have an official guess session here? Okay.
Okay.
Let's see
okay.
if you guys can guess it. All
let's
right?
do it. Yeah. Okay, great.
Joining our nonsense today is a fella who's not yet 40, but is already approaching the 20-year mark with his band. Okay?
Oh.
They are Grammy winners. They are known and loved worldwide. He was born in California but raised in England. He's got three children with his wife who has been a guest on this very podcast.
I know who it is.
Well, let's fucking hear it.
It's Chris Martin.
No. It's Marcus Mumford.
Bingo. Get out,
what? How about
Marcus.
That?
Wait, yeah. How did you
how
know
about that?
That
for a guest?
How did you know that?
Because
you know
he's what? A smart person.
Marcus,
wait, I liked my hints. Can I get on with my hints?
No, your hints were terrible. You know, I didn't know he was born in California.
Well, but I said his band sounds like a family law firm specializing in personal injury.
You didn't even say
personal injury.
It does sound like a plumbing company.
Mumford and Sons.
It does.
But that was on purpose, right, Marcus?
No, but Marcus, I knew I was just talking about I'm so excited for the doc, and I was just talking about you 10 minutes ago. So excited to come and see it.
Yeah.
Are you gonna come?
Yeah, man.
Are you gonna come? Oh, sweet.
It's just down the street. I might be working, but I might be able to make it. I think my wife will be there, which that's all anybody ever cares about.
She's my date.
Yeah.
Have you ever guessed a guest from their laugh before they've done the reveal? Because I was really, they freaked me out, man. Your guys freaked me out. They were like, don't breathe.
Oh, really?
until the reveal.
Wait.
And I wanted to laugh because you're very funny.
Did they make you think that we're prone to rage? Like if we hear
No, they made me feel, you know, in a very polite way, like I would ruin the entire show if I squeaked.
The whole surprise thing is so nuts. It's such a waste. It just saves us from doing homework. And the audience already knows who it is. We're the only two dicks that don't know who the guest is by the time the episode is up.
How dare you refer to me as the dick? But listen, it's fun. We're having fun. Okay, Jason?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Look
fun
into
times.
It.
Okay.
Marcus, welcome to Smartless. It's
hi,
about
guys.
Time.
I'm genuinely so on. I was early on Smartless. I was very early.
Oh. You came to the show in LA. I remember
I
you and I, we went to an early screening of Maestro together.
We did. Yeah.
And you said, and it was right after our show, and you said, I came to the show, and I said, I was so surprised.
It was the night you guys were filming, and it was really hectic.
Wait, and was it, you mean like the
LA
live show? In the dock?
Yeah,
the one
gotcha.
Downtown.
At the theater.
I can't remember what it's called.
Orphan.
And I didn't want to bother you because it was super hectic. But yes, I came to the show, and I've been listening to your show for a very long time.
It's crazy.
You're ready for notes. Do you have any notes? What would you
do? Got
if you
few notes.
Us,
yeah.
How would you change it? We're looking to
you
improve.
You know what? Here's
the hair shit was a low point, I think.
Yeah, it's all low points. What we do is we establish the bar low early, right?
Just
and
to
then
make the
everything feels like a
the
win.
The only way is up.
I love it. It's just very cozy. I love it.
I tell you something, Marcus. What's interesting? You brought up something, and we're about to tap into a runner thematically. Is that you told me that you were at the show, and I vaguely remember at the time sort of saying, "I wish you had said hi," and then you just mentioned it was hectic, and you didn't want to say hi. You came to our show and didn't come backstage and say hi. And Jason has thoughts on this.
Hold on. This is we're not talking Broadway theater.
Yeah, right. Let's do it.
Right?
I need your opinion on this.
It's adjacent. Yeah. It's adjacent.
I went to see. Do you know who I went to see last week in Exeter? Was Tim Key. Now, do you know Tim Key?
Oh, yeah, he's brilliant.
He's one of my favorite comics of all time. I think he's a genius.
Brilliant.
And I went and watched his show and was about to leave and thought to myself, now, he knows I'm here. He helped with the tickets. It is rude to leave.
Well, that's different.
If someone has helped you with the ticket.
Amen.
Without saying, great show.
But so how about this, right? So you are a musician and you are in live venues and theaters. And so there are some famous people that come see your shows lot.
Here we go.
Does the same rule apply there? Are you aware who's in there? Are you offended if they don't come back and say, hey, great
no,
show?
Culturally very different in music.
Very different.
Interesting.
Very different.
See, I'm more of a rock and roll guy at heart, guys. Than
wait, what's your position, Jason? Are you a no-show at the show?
I think it's presumptuous for people in the audience who are famous or even pseudo-famous to think that, they'll be welcome backstage just because you share fame.
That's also my instinct.
To, like, come say hi. It's just, like, it's so arrogant. Like, just get the hell out and let
it's more
rest.
Like you probably want to see me because I'm really famous,
right.
So I'll bless you with my presence.
Right. Yeah, and let you know how great I think you were.
Right. Well,
or not, or talk about how great the program was, or the lighting,
right.
or
right.
find something polite to say.
There's that famous clip from the Madonna documentary, Truth or Dare, when Kevin Costner comes backstage. Did you see that?
Oh,
and
really?
He goes, yeah, I thought, and she just spent 3 hours, you know, she's drenched in sweat, you know, performing for 5,000 people. And he goes, yeah, we thought it was really neat.
Ew.
Yeah, yeah.
And she turns to the camera. She goes, anybody who calls my show neat has got to go.
Yeah, right in front of him.
No, he left and she goes, like that on camera.
My favorite backstage moment like that when I was invited, very, very explicitly invited backstage, was after Kendrick Lamar played Bonnaroo.
Wow.
And there was a sort of message that came down from on high that Kendrick would like to see you. And when Kendrick calls, you come, right?
Sure,
because
he's
the king.
Sure, yeah.
And I learned that lesson the hard way.
And it was like, you can go in now. and he took off almost all of his clothes as I walked in.
Hang on.
It was amazing.
It sounds more like Bonnaroo. If you
We'll be right back after these messages from...
It was amazing, and I thought, like, the gumption, to be like, yeah, come on back after the show, and it'll be the very moment when I take all my clothes off, and I'm just down to my undies.
It's confidence.
And then we'll have a chat.
I don't know.
That's confidence. Real confidence.
But aren't you comfortable with that? Like even on a TV set or a film set or whatever, people knock on my trailer door. I'm like, come in. I'm dressing. I don't care.
Right. It is a dressing room.
Yeah.
That's
true. Marcus, you bring up Tim Key, whom I also adore, and he did that incredible film with your wife.
He did.
The Ballad of Wallace Island, which I love that film.
I did too.
Brilliant, brilliant film, wasn't it? We're not going to get into Carrie's career, but it, I mean, amazing.
Good, because I haven't seen a lot of it, but that one I've seen three times. I love that one so much.
So, me too. You guys, I urge anybody to see The Ballad of Wallace Island. It's such a beautiful little film. It's so funny and poignant and just amazing. Beautiful, beautiful film.
Well, I got so into Tim's podcast. He's got like a Radio 4, it's not a podcast, it's a radio show in the UK on public radio. And I got so deeply into it in COVID that when he wrote to Carrie with a script, I was like, you absolutely have to do this movie. Him and Tom Basden together are phenomenal.
Tom Basden, amazing too.
Yeah.
So amazing.
And just for my sister, your wife is Carrie Mulligan. Just so for Tracy, my sister, in case she doesn't
know. Hi, Tracy.
Yeah.
Tracy almost crashed. She was trying to
Google. Driving. You know.
Hey, Siri.
Who is
pulling into Kohler, Wisconsin with her phone in her hand?
So Marcus, getting back to that for one quick second, she can't possibly see all your shows because you're playing almost every night.
No, she actually broke a record.
So are you allowed to not see all of hers?
Yeah. She came on tour. I think she, in 1 year, maybe was at 48 shows.
Oh, God.
And watched two. Not the whole thing. top and tail. She says she likes our band, our recorded music. There's some caveats. The first time she saw our band play, she thought we were quite shouty. And to be fair, I think she's right about that. But then, you know, she's put up with it for a long time. But then, she doesn't feel like if she's on the road, she has to come to every show.
Wait, Marcus, did you guys meet at summer camp? Am I right about that?
Yeah, we met at Bible camp. Yeah,
Bible camp. Really?
I was 10, she was 12.
What?
Yeah. Nice work.
Nice.
Yeah, so you guys were, now she started to tell some of the story, I think I remember
about how
they were pen pals, right?
Yeah.
We were pen pals. And she still has the journal entry from the day we met where my cousin was there, who was 2 years older, who was age appropriate for her, he got a 8.5 out of 10, but I, who was definitely not underlined boyfriend material, got a 9 out of 10.
Wow.
Oh.
Go figure.
But, so then what made you not boyfriend material? Because you were just
10.
I was two years younger and I was also a foot shorter.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't because you were a monster running around and being a pain.
No,
in the
well,
ass.
She did write in her journal that I was a bit aggressive on the soccer pitch.
Yeah, sure.
that I'd gone in a bit heavy on some of the tackles, which lines up. But then we stayed in touch as kids, I guess, and then we reconnected in our 20s.
I just love that.
And did you lighten up? Are you still a heavy tackler? Or, I mean, let's...
Yeah, well, yes. Yeah, yeah. It's one of the few times I'll drop a C-bomb in earnest. Is sure. Co-ed soccer in the States, particularly. I lived in Denver, and I used to play co-ed soccer, and, you know, you can't retaliate, or at least where I come from, you know, a woman tackles you really hard. You can't retaliate, so... yeah, I get it. Yeah, so the rage comes out on the football field sometimes.
Oh, God. It's a big game on right now, Willie. I bet you're taking
it. I know.
Right? I know, guys, whoever organized this.
I know.
I can't believe we've done this.
I know. I'm watching it. I've got it, too.
Have you got it on? Okay, great.
I just turned it off.
But don't spoil it, right? Are you? Yeah, because I'm going to watch it afterwards.
Yeah.
It's really intriguing right now, by the way. It's really intriguing. We're at an intrigue. They've just come out.
I haven't got a live feed because I was thinking about, and then I didn't press record. So
should we take a break?
Are you in the UK? Marcus, are you in the UK or are you here?
Yeah. And so I thought on Champions League final day, we'd be safe to do a chat at 5 or 6. Turns out it was an early kickoff, 5 o'clock.
But do you honestly want to take a 2-second break and go hit record so you can see the second half?
I'll
do it on your phone. Yeah, for sure.
No.
No?
Don't worry about it. It's fine. Right. If it was an England game. So we have a fairly new management team last couple years, and
who's we?
They haven't managed us.
Thomas Tuchel.
They haven't managed. Sorry, band management.
Oh, okay.
They haven't managed our band through a World Cup summer.
Uh-oh.
And it's a big deal trying to manage our band during a World Cup summer, because if there's any kind of we tend not to play on England days because they're big days. I take this stuff very seriously, and I sat them all down for the third time. In about February, we delayed the announcement of our tour because they hadn't yet announced what dates and days the group games were going to be. And so business-wise, it was almost a disaster. But we waited for so long because we waited to announce the tour so that we knew we weren't going to be on stage when England were playing, right? And I sat everyone down. I said, look, guys, management's going great. You're doing a really good job. But just so you know, we've had this conversation now 3 times. I'm deadly serious. If you double book us when England are playing, everyone is fired. And I think they've got the message pretty clear now. And I think I'm going to manage to sneak to a couple of games. But it's a big summer. It's a big summer.
Yeah.
So let's go back to being a kid. And we're right in there around summer camp. And
where did you grow up? Jason said you grew up in California.
No, I was born in California.
Oh, you're born. Yeah, okay.
But evacuated to England at 6 months old.
So not even.
I grew up in London.
What were the conditions under which you were born in California? Why is that?
My parents were working there for a couple of years down in Anaheim.
Yeah,
for a church, I popped up along the way, and then they came back home to plant a church in London from the Californian one.
Got it.
Okay. And then, at what point then was music introduced to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was the kitchen. My mum listened to a lot of music and had a vinyl collection that I was allowed access to quite early on. And then we would listen to music.
What were some of those vinyls?
Well, it was a lot of classical music and a lot of choral music, because she was in a choir at university and stuff.
That's cool.
And then the only two kind of pop records she had, or non-classical records, were Blood on the Tracks.
Amazing.
And House of the Rising Sun by The Animals.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And so I played them to death. And then we leaned heavily into The Greatest Hits by Bruce Springsteen. That was like the family car record.
But so that explains that you don't have an aversion, or rather you have an attraction to or an ability to incorporate these other instruments and instrumentation around your music. Some people call it folk. I know that's not really accurate. But the fact that you can work in all these different sounds, and your music, your sound, the band's sound is so full and varied. Does that have some roots in the classical music that you were, all the multiple instruments?
Yeah, maybe. I think that's partly a reflection of the taste that, you know, amongst the band members. Like, me and Ben and Ted all have real different tastes in music, and it covers most genres. Ted's the best guitar. He's the bass player. He's the best guitarist in the band by a long way. He plays jazz and blues and kind of studied it, but plays the bass in the band, which is very kind of kind, actually. And then Ben grew up playing lots of classical and jazz on piano and saxophone. He was a better drummer than me at school. And then we cover most of the genres together. Yeah. And I think we've always felt like whatever instruments suit the song that we're writing at the time.
Right.
You know, so we leaned heavily into like electric guitars and stuff on the third and fourth records. And now I've kind of come back more to the acoustic stuff. And it's just fun, man.
Yeah.
We love it.
We'll be right back.
And now back to the show.
What about you playing so many different instruments? That's not super common, right? I mean,
the key is learning three chords on lots of instruments.
Yeah, but I mean, playing drums is so not the same as playing a guitar. What's more difficult? It seems like the drums would be very difficult to master, or is it just?
Well, I mean, that was my instrument at school, and I took it fairly seriously, and you know, did the grading system, and. That started with pots and pans in the kitchen with my mum and dad. And then I played all the way through high school. I played at college just for the year that I'd lasted at college. And then got hired as a drummer in a band.
For Laura
Marling. So I quit college. For Laura Marling, yeah. So I quit college to go play for Laura. Well done. And that was my first job in music. And that's really nice. Thanks. And so I got hired as a session drummer. And I still like to play drums for people when I get the chance, honestly, because I love it. But then I learned open tunings on the guitar so that I could play it like a percussion instrument, really, without having to read. I can read drum music. I can't read, you know, other music.
Oh, really? What does drum music look like?
Yeah.
Drum music.
X's.
It's still on a stave. Yeah, there's X's and there's noughts and crosses, basically.
And so, like the snare is an X, and the kick drum is a
the bass drum goes at the bottom, and then the snare is like two down, you know, where the C would normally be, and the hi-hats are on top, and they're normally X's, and then the cymbals are on top of that. They stack it on.
So the you know the note, like there's this a line, and then the black dot.
Yeah.
Instead, it's a line with an X, and that's percussion.
For cymbals, it's an X. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Wait, Jason and Will, did you ever try to learn an instrument or no?
Piano, I played as a little kid, and then when I got too big to be pushed around, I said, I'm out.
Yeah, sure, I understand that.
So you always had a great attitude, is that what you're saying? You're consistent.
No, it wasn't like,
I wish I'd stayed with him.
But, you know, it's like my parents, like they said, you know, it's like it's a form of discipline. You're going to have to do your practice for an hour every single day.
Yeah.
Then, so they made it fun.
Exactly. That was a problem. Like, you know, they should have made it fun. Like any kid, you're going to try to cheat and not practice. And so they set up a tape recorder that I had to put on the piano and press record during my 1 hour practice to prove that I was practicing. Of course, it was the same music that I was practicing each and every week.
So you just played the same.
So you record it once and just turn that in.
Record it once. And they bought it. I mean, it's just, you're not getting any better by Friday each week.
Yeah.
That was your audition for It's Your Move. That sounds like a thing your character in It's Your Move would have done. The show Jason did when he was like 15. It was so funny. Mark, because I played over here. It was a brilliant show where he just played a kid who did shit like that all the time. I wish I had. I did a couple instruments here and there during school, and I just wish I'd stuck with it. It's one of those, like, I can play four chords on a guitar really sloppily.
But let me ask you this, Marcus, to Will's point is like, Once you learn and become proficient, as you have in so many areas of music, and not only music, singing and all that, you don't listen to other music the same way.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas somebody like Will or Jay, who
I love music.
Yeah, you have a different appreciation for it. Not that you don't if you know it, but you know, it's just a different ear.
We had this conversation the other day. We had a party at home. It was Kerry's birthday, and someone came and they were like, "There's no music," and I was like, "Yeah, we don't really play music as back. I can't do background music because if music's on, I want to like lean in and listen to it, and I can't switch that part of my brain off. So then Kerry doesn't like having music in the house because I just stop having a conversation. Like if music comes on, and she'll be like, "You've gone." I was like, "Oh, sorry, let's turn it off then." I guess.
And then when you listen to it, do you analyze it? The chord progressions, the melodies,
Normally, you know, and a lot of the time, then they'd sort of store it to try and copy it. You know.
Sure.
Do you listen to a lot of new music at all?
Yeah, Yeah, I listen to probably mostly new music, actually. And if I'm on my own, that's when I listen to music.
And how are you finding the new stuff? Is somebody giving you tips on like, oh, you should check this out? Or how about this, you know, all those streaming services, they figure out what you like and then they send you suggestions stuff. Do you find that helpful? Do you follow some of those?
Sometimes. Yeah. Some of my favorite music I found on TikTok when I was on it.
Yeah.
And now I'm not on it. Yeah. My new music has dried up a bit, actually. I was enjoying that. There's an amazing British band called Divorce.
Oh.
Great band name.
Yeah,
who
it is good.
Became my new favorite obsession. I was completely obsessed with them. We got them to come on tour with us, which is fun.
Oh, wow.
Well, I just found the algorithm, you know, fed them to me.
So you found them and said, hey, let's get these guys to come on tour with us.
Yeah, and then we ended up recording a song together. And
I love that.
Wait, you had to cut yourself off from TikTok? Is that what I'm sniffing out?
I did, yeah. Uh-huh. I did it ahead of putting out the new record because I just wanted to be insulated from how other people felt about it because I knew how I felt about it.
And
I didn't need some like comment somewhere spoiling my experience because I was happy with it.
Good for you. Yeah.
And I couldn't change it. It was done.
Yeah.
And this is the first time I've ever put a record out where I genuinely have not read a word about it and I feel free.
That's really cool.
It's cool. I mean, it's a privilege, obviously, but it's cool. So other people do our socials and stuff, and you know, we send stuff over and we think about it, and we're intentional about it. But I don't have to do any of it or be on any of it, which is cool.
You must come across bands and stuff when you're touring too, or if you do a festival, do you like all of a sudden do you find yourself going, oh wait, what is that going on over there, and hear somebody that way? Does that ever happen?
Yeah, and a lot of the time, it's just recommendations from mates, you know. They're like, you should listen to this. And sometimes when we're discussing who to come on the road, one of us will pipe up with something we've been listening to, you know, because we're very intentional about who comes out and supports us on tour. Because those are the shows I go to now.
Yeah,
you know,
right, of course, yeah.
And I'll go, and every night, I don't like playing a show without watching the support band first, because it just gets me in the mood and it makes me feel what the room's like.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
There's a new English band that I've been obsessed with, West Side Cowboy. Have you heard these guys?
Yeah.
So fucking good, man.
Didn't they support Geese on their
run?
And I think they support, them and Dove Ellis. So that I found Dove Ellis through Geese because I knew he was on the road with them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, the rest of the internet obsessed with them. And that's how I found Dove Ellis. So a lot of the time it's just like who's playing with who and these little communities that pop up, you know, which we were part of when we first started as a band. And that's really how people discovered us because they'd come to a Laura Marling. That's how Carrie found out about our band. She booked a ticket to a Laura Marling show. And then we started shouting sort of an hour before Laura went on. And then she was like, oh, Mumford, I knew a kid called Mumford. And I love those little communities filled, you know. Yeah. She left a note with our tour manager.
She didn't come backstage.
She left a note. See, that's classy.
That is classy.
Really classy.
Well, wait, so I'm embarrassed. She probably told us this, so I apologize for forgetting. But on the note, did she say, hey, so I did know this guy named Mumford. I forget his first name. Is his name?
Do you know what? We were both, I guess, on Facebook for a 6-month window when I was still at college, and we connected there. And then this was like a couple years after that when we'd started the band and I was still playing in Laura's band. And so she left a note with our tour manager with her email address on it, I think.
Wow.
But so knowing that it was you, once she saw you on stage, maybe? Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, she
did. What's great, you know what's great about this, Marcus, is she, but also email, not the phone number. Just another layer. You know what I mean?
Lovely.
Just slow play, real classy.
She's
right.
Got skills.
Yeah. She's a classy broad.
Yeah.
A classy broad.
Well, when did you know that music might actually be a path towards a living for you as opposed to just fun?
Still not convinced.
Kid?
Still in some state of arrested development.
That was a band.
For Sean, that's a TV show that was on.
I gotta write that.
For Sean.
And is it playing now?
Was also a good band.
I was at college. I got offered a job playing music. I wasn't having a great time at college, so I stopped and took a sabbatical.
Where'd you go to college?
And I think Edinburgh. Oh,
okay.
And I think in my head, I'm still on my. Until quite recently, I've been on my sabbatical from college.
Sure.
Thinking that you would probably go back.
Yeah.
And what would you have studied if you'd gone back?
I was doing classics. I was doing Greek and Latin.
What, literature?
To do what?
Unclear. You know, it's not a vocational.
No, it isn't.
Just yeah. Reading? Reading?
It's like, what a lot of lawyers end up doing.
To be a monk?
Yeah. Classics in the UK particularly is seen as like a good, honest, old school degree to do if sure. You're doing something.
But what do you do with that degree? Like, I don't understand.
He said lawyers, yeah?
Oh, lawyer.
Well, what's cool about it as a...
Become a member of parliament.
Yeah, a lot of those. Oh. A lot of prime ministers do it. But I wasn't on that track. What's cool about it is it gives you access to poetry and philosophy and storytelling and language and linguistics, mm-hmm. anthropology, ancient history, all these things that you study through the original languages.
Jason, right. You're drooling. Your mouth is open. You're drooling.
So it's really geeky. And you get your geek goggles out when you're talking.
I bet
about,
it helps you when you write lyrics.
And then if it's windscreen. And it's how I got introduced to poetry. It's how I fell in love with words, honestly.
Oh, wow.
And then I started reading T.S. Eliot really pretentiously as like a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
And suddenly words had a new depth to them. And... you know, he was a classicist too, and was the references, a lot of classical references, and I'd sort of read a bit of Homer and then switch over to Eliot and be like, oh, cool, look at the way they've he's joined up and referred back to this. And,
yeah.
Can't you just see 17-year-old Marx just riding a bicycle through some field and then just like dropping into a field and reading poetry?
With a baguette and a basket on the bike.
Yeah, I was that guy. I was sat on the train to Edinburgh wearing thick fabric and a collar that I cut the collar off my shirt because I'd seen the assassination of Jesse James and just got deep into poetry. Until this last record, I've been in denial about that too. Like, you know, I've been in this process of being like, this is kind of who I am now. This is what I do. So for Prize Fighter, I'd go and sit in the coffee shops in Hudson, New York, because we were recording with Aaron Dessner at Long Pond, and I'd sit in the coffee shop for 2 hours every morning. I'd do my artist sway, like morning pages, and I'd sit and read poetry like a real twat and just really lent into my identity at this point. And it helped me write lyrics, you know.
Let's hit Babel for a second here. So what did that the incredible success of that album do for you as far, like personally, like was it jarring to sort of have that next step of success and recognition and treasure and like did you adapt well to that? Was it a fun thing or was it a bit disruptive?
That's a great question, actually.
Thank you.
Finally.
For once. I don't think anyone, unless you're maybe one of Simon Cowell's projects, I don't think you're trained, you know, to have that kind of level of success. We started playing music because we loved playing. We loved each other. Right. And it was just fun. And we got free beers. Mm. And then suddenly, we were playing 250 shows a year. And then suddenly, you know, the first record starts gaining some pace. We took 6 weeks off tour to make Babel, which our producer at the time was really frustrated about. He's like, why do you have shows booked on the other side of a recording process? That's really dumb creatively. But we rushed it, and I think we got it right, but it was pressurized. And then the success of that record around the world, really, and particularly in the States, just opened us up to a world we weren't like ever anticipating or planning for. And, I don't think unless you're a kind of pop project, you're even imagining it. And then suddenly the shows are all selling out and you're moving into bigger spaces and fulfilling lots of your dreams as a kid, like to headline Glastonbury.
Yeah,
we only did
crazy.
On two records, you know. I remember getting to the end of the set. We basically had to play the whole of both records to fill the time. And I remember getting to the end of the set and just being like, we just need more songs, man.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we got. We need more songs. Because you watch Springsteen play for 3 hours and he's playing like just hit after hit after hit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wasn't really prepared for the success of that record. And I think we reacted to it a bit by making a record on the third one that no one was expecting from us. No one particularly wanted, but we loved it. And it took us into bigger rooms as well. And that was how it went widescreen. And then the fourth record, and then we had a long gap before the fifth and sixth records.
Yeah, how long was that gap?
That was like on paper, it was 7 years. I mean, we were touring for two of those after Delta came out, and then COVID happened.
Yeah.
So we were apart as a band for maybe 3 years. Yeah,
that's a lot. Well,
what was that? What was that biggest adjustment there when that first wave of big success came in? I mean, obviously, most notable would be the bigger crowds and the sellouts, and probably nicer hotels, and you're flying from city to city instead of the buses, maybe, or like just silly things like that. But it must have been pretty heady too, right? You're watching people, you know, sing your songs en masse, and probably getting some feedback as to how you're affecting people and changing their lives a bit. And, probably a weaker, more insecure person would probably buy into that a lot and kind of own a lot of that. But I'll bet you sort of deflected a bit of that and tried to keep it all about the music and keep it simple. And I mean, but you tell me.
It drove a bit of my shame narrative that was already there that I've looked at a little bit. I drank a bit more than probably I should have.
Like imposter kind of stuff?
Yeah, a bit of that. Yeah, a bit of that for sure. And I went in a bit.
Yeah.
And on stage, you'd be very out, you know, give yourself completely. And then my friendship circle shrunk a bit.
Yeah.
I think, I did use booze particularly as a bit of an escape. And then really throughout it all, honestly, my marriage has just been the best thing about everything.
So. But I think as we get older, it sort of naturally and in a very healthy way, I think most people, that circle gets smaller. You figure out more accurately who you are and what the proper fits are for you. And that usually equates to a smaller, more specific, more precise experience with people, right? You're not out there shopping as much for...
Yeah, and I think I recognized the idea of capacity.
Yeah.
Because for a few years there particularly, I was spread really thin. I mean, you guys must find this with your jobs as well. You meet so many people and a lot of them you love and then you want to be friends with and then you connect with other people. And then I found myself getting spread really thinly and not being very good friends to my friends.
Right.
And then that shrinking happened a bit. So... in a kind of healthy way, I think. So I guess it's, I think you're right. It's partly growing up. But I suppose I dealt with it all in a bit of unhealthy ways. Then I stopped drinking booze more out of choice than necessity, although, you know, we could debate that. And then replaced it with ice cream for a while until I was told, you know. I wasn't losing any weight. I was really confused about the whole thing.
We have similar paths in that way. I did the same. I did that route too, where it was like an ice cream based diet after I quit boozing.
Yeah. Well, because you miss the sugar. I remember that.
Yeah. I miss it too. Wait, Marcus, you know, I'm always kind of interested
probably been
in
an hour.
At least I'm like I'm starting to shake. You know, I'm always interested when people like you who have bands and you. I mean, you tell me, did you have vocal training or know any or how to use your voice or because when I go, for example, I'm a massive Depeche Mode fan. They came on the podcast. It was really wild. I'm also a huge fan of yours, and I love all kinds of music too, and. I went to go see Dave Gahan sing, and I can tell right away, oh, he didn't warm up.
Huh.
And then after the first couple songs, his voice kind of opened up a little bit, and then it was great. And it was great from the beginning, too, but just kidding.
Reach out and touch faith.
Bum, bum, ba-do-do. And then did you have any kind of training, or did you realize when you were touring, like, oh, shit, I don't know how to take care of the kind of athleticism of my voice?
Yeah. I was convinced for years that whiskey and cigarettes really helped.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
Right.
And then just recently, I've started... Actually, Brandi Carlile introduced me to her vocal coach, a guy called Rob Stevenson, who's totally changed my world and given me some education on stuff. Like, it's a muscle and you have to warm it up. And I've been lucky... not to, and I watched friends around me get affected by the polyps thing and losing their voices. I don't think we've cancelled a show for my voice in
That's
the past.
That's amazing.
Which has been cool. Like the only couple of shows that I remember cancelling were because Ted had a brain hemorrhage.
Oh, geez.
Which wasn't funny at all. But,
no.
Get up.
But now it's quite funny because he had to wear a hat for a while.
Well, he headlined
Glastonbury 2 weeks after getting that surgery, like a legend. And I think we cancelled two shows for that. But we've just been lucky, and my voice has been resilient.
Amazing.
But I think recently I've realised it's a muscle. Now I have a full routine and I look after it and I quit smoking and all that stuff.
Yeah, good, good, good.
And we will be right back.
And back to the show.
What does that mean about the polyps? Because I had polyps removed from my vocal cords, but
it means weak psychologically.
Yeah. Oh, damn it.
Yeah. It's the piano lesson thing. It's because it's a piano. It's your parents were right. It was character development. Yeah, you missed out on.
No, but I think the doctor did say that I wasn't using my voice correctly because I was like screaming in bars, you know, and smoking cigarettes and stuff. And he said I wrecked it that way. Is that what happens to musicians or to singers that don't know how to warm up correctly or use you can create polyps on your vocal
cords? I honestly don't know.
Okay.
I think the wear and tear of it is true.
Yeah.
I know that going out after shows, I just don't ever do that anymore because talking in loud rooms after shows is the thing that is worse for your voice.
Yeah, right. For sure. Yeah.
So after a show, I don't go on voice rest. I'm not like precious about it.
Right.
But I don't go out and I stay away from loud places.
Well, you also have a wife you love and three kids that you got to go spend time with too, you know?
Also, I've just become quite boring and monkish, you know, on the road.
Jason, did Amanda ever develop polyps?
Oh boy.
From screaming.
That's your date. That's your date. And I know, she may cancel on you now.
I love her. I love her more than anything in the whole world.
Hey, so
I lost my voice 2 days ago, actually, a little bit.
Really?
Too bad
you found it.
Wait, you know, Will, have you ever checked that out? Go ahead. Jay.
I lost mine 2 weeks ago. Yeah, it's still weak. I if I ever did theater, I'd have I would need to take real lessons about how to use
my voice. Have you not done theater?
No. I mean, tiny, small room stuff, but like if I ever did it, you know, here in New York, I'd need help.
Jay, I was thinking the same thing yesterday. I didn't fully lose it, but I was really close. And I thought, I was just thinking about you, Sean, and about how much, you've been basically on stage for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Kind of straight.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
And Marcus, you must have the same thing. And I thought, I'm going through this thing of like,
nice.
Like I would if I were in a play right now, I'd be fucked. I wouldn't be able to do it tonight.
Yeah, 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 yeah. You really have to take care of it. Yeah.
And Sean, do you do like a full hour every night before you?
Yeah, I there's songs that I'll sing to warm up. Like if I know if I'll sing all by myself and if I can hit that high note,
let's have it.
All by myself. Then I can do the whole show.
Sick.
Yeah.
You know what
it's
I mean?
Funny. And you do it, usually do it through tears, right?
Right. No, that's the song because it was a one-man show. So I would sing all by myself to warm up.
Marcus, do you have a go-to little thing that you do for warm-up? Like a little scale thing or something like that?
Yeah, I do. It's called the penguin noise. It's a lot of this.
Yeah. That's good.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and then vocal straws. I use straws. It's about like, I mean, we could get techers if you want, but it's about getting your larynx to drop back down, like putting your tongue at the back of your throat.
And opening and your palate. Yeah.
With a straw? Literally with a straw?
And then the straw helps with back pressure. So you blow bubbles into a bottle through a straw.
Yeah.
And then the back pressure helps open that up and ease all that out. It's like a little reverse massage.
Do you ever accidentally throw up? Do you ever accidentally throw up when you do it with the straw?
I can't eat like 4 hours before we go on stage because then bits come up. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Because it's all quite shouty, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why.
Jason, you accidentally throw up after a lot of big meals, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, darn it.
But I hold his hair.
I've got to get it out inside 10 minutes, otherwise it starts to absorb the fat.
Okay.
So, Marcus, we're a month into your tour. What will have been the most important part of your prep to go on some long tour? Like, do you have to get, you know, your family stuff all in order so that it can withstand you being gone so long? Do you have to get your body in order so it can withstand the hours and the, like, what is prep for a long tour?
I got to a point a couple years ago. I was like, there is an element of physicality to my job that requires me to train a bit
more.
So yeah. I have been working on that and trying to approach it more like an athletics program, and everything else will follow if I can do that stuff well.
What are we looking at? Cardio? Are we pushing weight? What's our training
all that
look
stuff.
Like?
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah. Really? Yeah, and then we have a little gym on the road that helps. There's a lot of singing. It turns out that singing, playing guitar and stamping like this with your feet, which you must remember, Jason, from that video.
Jay
was in the video.
I forget. So yes. Fun.
That stuff turns out is some sort of cardio. I used to think it was enough to it's exhausting.
Talk about how did that happen? How did Jason Bateman end up
less
in your video?
Disdain.
No, I spit it out. How the fuck did Jason Bateman
Sam Jones, wasn't it? He called you up.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Sudeikis? I think maybe I was doing Horrible Bosses at the time. Maybe it was, I'll bet you Sam contacted. I didn't know Sam, so he wouldn't have contacted me. So it would have been probably Sudeikis or Ed or Will. And then I don't know how they got to me. Must have got a lot of passes before they got to me. But God, that was so fun.
Probably my favorite music video we've ever done, because I didn't have to do anything. Really, and I just got really to watch fun. You guys do it. Absolutely amazing.
Forte killed me on that.
Oh yeah, Will Forte was in it too.
The hard kiss.
All right, so that brings us to Sam. That brings us to the doc. Let's talk about the doc. Let's talk about the train tour. Doc. Let's talk about you arranging for those other groups and because you spoke earlier about picking, you know, the bands that you guys are interfacing with. So let's go in order. What's it like traveling on a train that long with that many people?
It's really exhausting. I don't recommend it. It's very confined. It's like being on a submarine. It's worse than a tour bus.
Right.
And really? I mean, it was.
So tell the audience what the basic concept of this thing. And it was inspired by this happened, Woody Guthrie and gang, right?
Yeah, no? I think they did it. Basically, someone came to us, 2011, and said, we have access to a bunch of vintage rail cars. Do you want to go on tour on a train?
Yeah.
And we, at that point, were like, we'd just done a tour of India.
Yeah.
Well before we had any reason to do a tour of India. You know, we'd toured on a narrow boat. We liked putting up our own festivals. It was just like fun ways of like making the shit feel slightly different and discovering bits of the world that you might not otherwise. So we were feeling adventurous, and we said yes. We did it with Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros.
Great bit.
With Old Crow Medicine Show, and it was the best week on the road we've ever had. Mm-hmm. And we made a film, and it won a Grammy, and we were all very happy. It was great. And so we thought, let's run it back slightly differently. Let's get all of our favorite musicians together as a house band, and then every night we'll get special guests to come on stage with us.
Oh, wow.
So we had Lainey Wilson, Darius Rucker, Maggie Rogers, and Noah Kahan.
Wow.
And we learnt their songs the day before.
Wow.
And performed like the house band for them. And it was really fun. And we did it, we travelled by train. But that's not really the audience participation part, because obviously it was just us and crew that went on the trains. But it was only 5 days. So it was manageable, but it was exhausting.
But you've got Sam and his gang with the cameras in there documenting the, yeah?
Yeah, so Sam made this film for it. Which I really love, actually. I don't enjoy the process of making music films. I think in general they're quite boring, and I don't really watch them for pleasure. But
and
this
it can feel
one
like a reality show, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And I find it quite hard to relate to a lot of them. The Beatles one is my favorite of all time, and I've watched that many times. But other than that, I don't get a huge amount of enjoyment from watching this one, especially not our ones.
Yeah.
But this one, I actually think he did something really beautiful with, and the people involved were unbelievably kind with their time. And we made it kind of like a socialistic enterprise where everyone got paid the same. and whatever cash there was left in the pot after very expensive trains, we just shared out. And then our friends really gave us their time, you know.
That's
and
really
they're
great.
Phenomenal musicians, and we had that's a really cool time.
I was going to say so for Tracy, but she knows because she met Sam when we were on tour. Sam Jones is the same guy who did the Smartless on the Road special that we did. So that's
right.
we all know Sam through the process.
Yeah, that's so cool. I didn't know he did this, and I didn't know anything about this. When can we
and
see
I'd
it?
Made a film with him before. He made the documentary about the new Basement Tapes thing that we did with Elvis Costello and Jim James and Taylor
Gosmith.
Oh, I don't
know about this.
Yeah, and Giddens. We took old Bob Dylan lyrics that T-Bone Burnett had like pilfered off Dylan and asked if we could record music for them. And Dylan amazingly said yes. They were literally from shoeboxes and the Big Pink from the 60s. And so we wrote music to all these unused lyrics, which was really fun. And Sam made a documentary of that. So I'd worked with him before. And obviously he shot our Rolling Stone cover, which I hate. But he also made that Hopeless Wanderer video that Jason was in. Mm. So we'd worked with him a bit before, and he came on and did it. And it was sweet.
And he also made the Wilco doc, I'm Trying to Break Your Hearts.
Which is
also amazing.
So great. It's
wow,
so good.
I want to see that doc you were just talking about. I want to see that one where you guys with the Dylan.
Oh, it's sweet. Yeah, it was good. It was a while ago.
I do too, actually.
Go ahead, Johnny.
I was just going to do my standard, like, do you have any, like, one show or one fan interaction on stage that just went horribly wrong or something that went horribly wrong on stage during a tour?
Yeah, recently. We started the Prizefighter tour in Australia.
Yeah.
And we played a song for the first time. And it went so badly wrong, we stopped halfway through and we didn't start the song again.
No way.
I bet the crowd loved that, though.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I love that.
What did you say?
I said, that's live music, folks. And we moved on. And I wanted to fall through the floor so badly. It was the worst. I think it was the worst moment I've ever
Wait, why
had
did
on.
You stop?
Oh, it was just a disaster. Everyone was in the wrong key and wrong time. And it was just a disaster and would have required a full rehearsal to do it. And I thought that was probably pushing it. So we just stopped and moved on to one there.
And you just thought, we'll get this. We'll get this. Watch this. Six, seven, eight.
It was awful. It was awful. It was so horrible.
But I'll bet you the audience loved it, though. Like kind of, you know, like a blooper, you know?
Yeah, so cool. Like,
yeah, I think... You know, yeah, my wife says things like, because I forget lyrics a lot. When I get nervous, my memory goes and I'll forget a lyric sometimes. And she'll be like, that's the bit people love.
Yeah.
That's the live bit. It's different to the record. And
I toured with Kenny Rogers when I was in my early 20s as a Christmas elf in his tour.
Amazing.
And he would forget the lyrics all the time. And whenever he did, he would just hold the microphone out to the audience.
Oh.
Smart.
You got to know when
Sean, I thought you'd go, hey, Santa, the lyric is...
shuffle over like a little helpful elf. Hey.
Have you ever done that on stage, though? Wait, because that terrifies, especially with a one-man show. Have you ever forgotten your lines?
Yeah. There's one... I just did it. Yeah, absolutely terrifying. There is one part where the line is... you know, I say to one of the characters, I say, are you going to be here? No, how long are you in town for? And he says, the weekend. I say, can we get together and discuss this one thing? He says, sure. And then I say, your last name is Dupain. And then one night I go, as one of the characters, I go, how long are you in town for? He goes, the weekend. And I go, can we get together? And I go, And I go, and then I go to myself, I go, wait, how long are you in town for? To the character. And I go, I just told you I'm in town just for the weekend. And it bought me time to think of what line was next.
Wow. And did you get there?
Yeah, thank God.
And do you think people noticed?
No, they don't fucking know.
Yeah.
And certainly the stage manager that was asleep in the wings not throwing you the line didn't notice either, right?
Right, yeah.
That just scares the living daylights out of me.
Yeah, it is pretty
All right, before we let you go, because we're 2 minutes over here, I want to know how being a parent has changed the way that you listen to music or write music. I'm assuming they go with you a little bit, but it's got to change the way you are as an artist, as a musician, yes?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's been a healthy, I think it's been a wonderful antidote to my narcissism. Because you can't just be the center. I mean, you probably can, but like, I found it difficult to remain the center of my universe.
Yeah.
With these little ones around.
Yeah.
And it puts everything else in perspective in such a helpful way for me.
Amen.
I've found it Yeah, like, same. So if you're asking about how it's affected my work, it makes me more intentional when I go to work. And actually, scheduling-wise, like, I just want our team to pack as much as they can into as short a period of time as possible. So I'll go away and I'll work really, really hard for whatever period of time I'm away, and then I come home and sooner than I would have if the schedule had been more easy, you know?
And I would imagine when you do come home, that is the thing you are most addicted to completely indulging in, right? You're irrationally excited to just like dive headfirst into family.
Yeah, I want to get home, you know, like one of the guys really likes doing the day. I just want to get home as soon as possible. I don't care which flight it is.
Right.
And then hopefully be there for the school run the morning after. And that's why dropping booze for me has been so helpful. It's just made my life more functional.
Get up earlier.
Because I get home, I'm not dusty. You know, I'm like,
yeah.
It's just so being great. Like present as fast as you can in an accelerated manner, it feels like. So it's made me more present, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And very, then more grateful good. When I get to go and do my work and go and play these shows. I just feel grateful for it. I'm in this season of gratitude with the band that I'm just really enjoying. I'll go away and be like, I've got to make the absolute most of this because it's awesome and it's amazing. It's such a privilege. And our audience have been so kind to us and continue to grow. And that's just felt like wild. And so I want to be really good. I want to be really great at that. And mm-hmm. that takes time and attention that obviously is a cost balance, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm just attacking it, and I'm.
Well, you are.
It.
You
well,
are
yeah, you start to
more.
Value. Well, sorry, Jay. I was just going to say, like, I've gone through that too in the last couple of years. It's like if you are going to do something that's taking you away from home and the kids and all this stuff, it's got to be valuable. You know
exactly.
And if you're going to do it wholeheartedly, and then you go because you really just want to be home,
right?
You know, so it's got to be it's got to be meaningful.
Well, we're grateful of the time you do spend out away from them
because
you are incredible at it. Keep going at it, and maybe we'll see you for the dock down the street.
I will see you, Jason.
With my wife.
Okay,
the woman he'll be with is my wife, and I want a full report, Marcus. Just take some pictures
with her polyps.
For me.
I'm really excited to see you guys. Yeah, thanks
likewise.
So much for having me.
Likewise.
Yeah, thank you for doing
this. Privilege.
Oh, man.
Yeah, thank you,
We're
lads.
Such fans.
Enjoy the rest
thanks.
Of your day,
Enjoy
pal.
The game.
Thank you. See you, guys.
Yeah. Okay, bye, Pop.
Peace. Bye.
That was Double M, as I like to call him. I call him Eminem. He loves it.
That was great. By the way, wasn't that crazy that at the beginning, we were talking about our hair, and you said, what's the name of your new hairdresser? And I said, Marcos.
No, it's not
Marcos.
Marcos Mumford.
Yeah, I just don't think.
And
that's
then the Marcus. Guest name was Mark. Well, it's M A R C O S, so it's the same. It's spelled the same.
I get where you're going with this, Sean, but you know, it's not. It's not
that crazy.
Nuts. It's not crazy. No,
I think that's really wild. I mean, what are the odds of that?
What are the odds?
He's great, though. I mean,
ChatGPT. What are the odds?
He is great. I didn't, you know, I never knew anything about him.
Yeah. I really like his flavor of British accent.
Can yeah, me too. That? I noticed that too, and I like that too.
It's melodious. It's nice.
It's calming.
They're definitely different regions of the British accent.
Which ones are there,
Jason?
There's sort of the aristocratic sound. There's the Liverpudlian. There's the slightly Scottish. There's the Welsh. Right, Will, you're the guy over there.
How dare you?
Right, and I wouldn't be able,
okay.
If you had to.
You're from Liverpool. You're okay. You're right, Jason.
Yeah. See, you can't just do a regular British accent if you're going to play a character. It's got to be region specific.
Yep. There's.
He's such a nice dude. I'm really excited for the doc. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it. I love him.
It's going to be. Really
what time
good.
Are you going to pick my wife up? And what are you going to wear?
Well, she's spending the night, so I think that we're going to...
Hang on.
We're going to be... We'll just get ready together, you know?
By the way, I was just talking to her right before this. She says, hello, Jason.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I have not spoken to her yet today. You guys really do
We can decide if we want to cut this. I said, are we doing dinner Sunday? She goes, I'm not sure. And if we don't do dinner, I go, well, we could get dinner. She goes, no, if we're not doing dinner with all of us getting together, I'm doing a full moon women's circle. LOL, hold your tongue.
Full moon women's circle.
Yeah, there is some kind of a full light bulb up in the sky coming up here soon.
How about that? Wait, and what do you do in the circle? I'll call her.
I don't know.
Maybe I'll do that.
Yeah, we'll trim this. All right. Who's got a buy? Anybody got a buy? Didn't I try to start something last week?
If we ever did a week where we didn't throw out a buy, we would have to call that the bye week. The bye week. We get a bye.
Don't need to keep saying it.
Bye.
Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Rob Armjarv, Bennett Barbaco, and Michael Grant Terry.
Smartless.